This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Hank Aaron joins us here on Sports Byline USA, the Hall of Famer and also the home run king, who hit 755 home runs. And back on April the 8th of 1974, he broke Babe Ruth's all-time home run record of 714. Hank, good evening. Nice to have you back here on Sports Byline.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Let's talk a little bit first about your career. 23 years in the majors. When you reflect back, what type of perspective do you put on your baseball career?
I don't know. I think it was I was satisfied with it. You know, I don't think that I look back on my career and can find any faults with it. You know, I did just about everything I wanted to do. I accomplished all of my goals, and so I feel like it was a mission well accomplished.
Did you ever think back when you were a kid growing up that you would do what you were able to do? I mean, what was the dream of Hank Aaron when he was a kid?
No, I didn't think about it at all. You know, all I wanted to do back then, of course, and I was just talking to somebody about it, was to try to get it in 5 years, and that would have been I would have been an invested member in the pension fund, and that's mostly what ballplayers thought about. You know, you didn't think in terms of playing 20-some years like I did, you know, but I'm awful glad that I did.
I think one thing that fans don't realize, Hank, is that Mobile, Alabama turned out an awful lot of good baseball players. It seemed like it was the breeding ground for great players, wasn't it?
Well, I tell you, you're absolutely right about that, Ron. We had that one time, I think that was as many as 8 or 9 major league players that was playing in the big leagues, you know, and they were all good. In fact, Billy Williams and McCovey, they all went into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, you're talking about myself, Billy Williams, McCovey, and Satchel Paige, all in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, Mobile doesn't have anything to be ashamed of. I think we turned loose our share of athletes.
What was your first exposure to baseball, Hank?
I don't know. I think my first exposure to baseball was just – baseball itself was just playing in the Negro League. You know, I played softball in high school, but never played baseball. So I actually started playing baseball when I was in the Negro American League.
When I think back, and I've talked with Willie Mays about the Negro Leagues and how special that time was, what was the cohesiveness? What was the general philosophy of the players that played in the Negro Leagues?
I think, Ron, I think that we all felt like if we could be successful playing in the Negro League, that we could probably play in the major leagues. I think all of us basically felt that way, because usually the players that, especially if you're a young player and you were playing against players who had played a little bit longer than you had, they had been some of them had been in the minor league, some of them had the experience of playing against great Negro League players. So we all felt like if we could have a good year, a good season, that you had a chance to play in the major leagues.
I was interested in a quote from President Clinton when you were being honored. He said, "From Mobile to Milwaukee to Atlanta, through segregated South, Hank Aaron moved through a changing America, and he changed the minds and hearts of Americans." I'm sure there was a lot of times in those early days when you wondered if those hearts or minds were ever going to be changed.
Well, no, I didn't. I think, Ron, I always felt like there was hope. I always felt like if you just keep doing your job, that somewhere you was going to touch somebody's mind and somebody's soul, and somebody was going to be wise enough to realize the only thing that you wanted to do was to have a chance to play baseball.
Did the segregation and the attitude of America at that time fuel the passion for black athletes to play the sport a little bit harder? I know that Jackie Robinson once, in a book that I read, talked about how he channeled his anger.
Well, I don't know whether we were angry at any particular thing. I think that we knew that if it was given the opportunity, that we had to take advantage of it, you know, because there were only a few of us. And we knew that if we failed, that it was going to fall upon the players that was coming behind us. So we felt like we wanted to play. We didn't have time to get angry. We had time to just reflect on what we needed to do and how we were going about doing it.
Over the years in talking to you and meeting you, you're one of the most unassuming people that I've ever met. You're so graceful in the way you move. And I wondered, as I thought about it, if it was difficult for you to deal with the slings and arrows that you had to deal with, especially during the home run breaking and everything. But then all of a sudden I thought to myself, here is a man that's quiet and is passionate. And I think that maybe that was somewhat protective, that may have helped you a little bit. Can you give me some insight to that, Hank?
I think you're right, Ron. I think the most important thing was the fact that in spite of all of the things that I had to go through, I think I kind of kept things in perspective. You know, I knew that I had a job to do, and if I had not been successful, then I would have fell in the hands of the people that who wanted me to fail. So I was not about to let that happen. I kept things in perspective, and I said, hey, I got to continue to do as well as I can do and to play this game the only way that I know how.
A fellow Hall of Famer, Joe Morgan, told me that when he broke into professional baseball, he was assigned to Durham with the Durham Bulls. And being a youngster from California, when he got there in the first game, he saw all the black people in one section of the stadium, and he said, I can't handle this. And he was going to call his dad and tell him he was quitting baseball, but he said he knew his dad would not let him do that and be angry with him. In the early days of your career in Major League Baseball, were there any times where you thought you were just not going to continue with this game, that it wasn't going to work out for Hank Aaron?
There were a time when I felt that way, but it was not because of the fact that I looked in the stands and saw segregated people. I mean, the stands being segregated. I was not. That was not it. It was just that I was lonesome. I wanted to go home to my mama. I was a mama boy. So that's how I felt. You know. Other than that, Ron, I don't think there was any other time that I wanted to quit.
What was the source of your power and success as a home run hitter?
I think making direct contact, making good contact, and being able to hit the ball squarely. You know, I mean, you know, I don't think that you need to weigh 250 pounds. You know, if you can recall, you know, Freddie Partak, who played with the Kansas City Royals for a long time, could hit a ball as far as anybody. And you know, I mean, he was a 5'5", and he weighed 118 pounds or something like that. So, you know, he was very small. You know, so it really that's the one good thing I guess about baseball is that you can see someone 6'6", hit a ball on the end of the bat and nub it over the infield. You can see someone 5 feet as Freddie Partak can and hit a ball 20 rows into the stands, and you start wondering, how can one guy be so big, hit the ball so soft? How can one guy be so small and hit the ball so far? It's just a matter of making contact and hitting the ball square. You know, if a ball is thrown 90 miles an hour and you hit it good and hit it on a fat part of the bat, if you hit it right, 9 times out of 10, it's going to have a chance to go out of the ballpark.
One of the things, Henry, that I don't believe you've been given enough credit for is the fact that a lot of people think of home run hitters as free swingers. You had a career batting average of .305. That is not a free swinger. That is somebody that is disciplined and knows the art of hitting. How did that come about?
Well, I don't know, Ron. It's just a matter of fact that I always felt like, in fact, I talked about this the other day, the most important thing was to make contact. If you make contact, you got a chance to do a lot of things.
But was it always that easy? I mean, did you just simplify it that much?
No, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. It was just a matter of, as I said before, I think that I was like most ball players, good ball players. I kept things in perspective. I kept focused on what I had to do.
The other thing I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong with this assumption, and Tony Gwynn and I were talking batting one time, he says the great hitters, whether they be power hitters or single hitters, is that they don't try to do something with the ball that they can't do. That they let the ball, if it's on the outside part of the plate, they try to go the other way. Were you that way as well?
Yes, yes. In fact, I taught myself how to be. When I first came up, I didn't know the strike zone very well, and then the last 10 years, I would say the last 10-12 years, I knew the strike zone. I felt very comfortable at what I was doing. I knew I was going to swing at a ball inside, outside. I knew what part of the plate I wanted to swing at it. And he's absolutely right. You try to give up what you can't do and try to master what you can do.
One of the other things that I think you probably are especially proud of, but rarely do people talk about, is you won 3 Gold Gloves. And I've talked to a lot of ball players that say, you know, of all the things that I did, winning a Gold Glove means the most to me. Was it the same way with you, Hank?
Well, all of those things, Ron. You know, winning the Gold Glove and also winning the batting title. You know, because. You know, most people, when you talk about my career and what it meant, and they say, what did he do? You know, he hit a lot of home runs. You know, they're not going to say he won a batting title. They're not going to say he won a Gold Glove. They're not going to say he won a run batting title. They're going to only concentrate on the home run. So quite naturally, you know, you feel good about those other things because that's what makes you a complete ball player.
Hank, let's talk about the season before, 1973. Tell me what that was like as you were nearing the record.
Well, it was it was a tough season, and the reason that it was so tough is because I guess at one point, especially the latter part of the season, everybody anticipated that I was going to break, had a chance to break the record. And, of course, like everything, you know, newspaper people start coming upon you, you know, asking you all kind of questions. Some was good, some was bad, some had some substance, some didn't have any. And there was no privacy. You know, I mean, my kids was caught up in a bubble. I was in a bubble. And I wasn't used to that, and I refused to let my children get involved in things like that. But I knew that I was coming upon something that nobody else had ever done in sport, and I knew that it was going to cause some trouble, so I was preparing myself. I said, now, if they come at me like they came at Roger Maris, I was going to try to handle it the best, a little bit better than Roger did, you know. But I ended the season up with 713 home runs, and everybody thought, say, hey, you know, what are you going to do? You going to go in hibernation? I said, no. I'm going to live my life the way I always lived it. You know, I'm just going to go and enjoy myself. And, of course, that when I went and got married, and so that's what happened. You know, it was a tough year, but after that, it was all over.
Since the game is so mental, and you were getting death threats, and you talk in the book about the death threats you got and some of the angry confrontations with people that did not want you to break a white man's record, did that play on that mental aspect of the game for you?
Well, a little bit, yes. But, I look back on that and I say, you know, that was a learning experience for me. You know, no matter how and where, no matter what you do in this world, no matter what you try to accomplish, sometimes people don't realize that you're only a human being, and you do everything that you can to try to do what is best for you and what you can do what's best for your team.
Afterwards, you just said you were glad it was over with. You must have been really relieved.
I was glad it was over with, yes, because and not only for myself, but I was glad for my teammates, and I was glad for my mother and father, you know, especially those two, because, you know, they were coming back and forth, and it was at the age where they needed to be stationary. You know, they didn't need to be running back to Atlanta and back to Mobile, so they need to be stay where they were and just watch a baseball game.
Hank, after it was over with and you set that record, how did life change for Hank Aaron? I mean, did you get the type of accolades that somebody has broken a major home run record deserved to have, or what was it like in those years after the home run record?
Not as much as you think I should have, you know, really. I don't think that, you know, there was no airplanes available for me. There were no huge endorsements that I made. You know, I signed one big cup for a big company, and I made a lot of little money, but there was no big endorsements for me, you know. It was just something that was quietly broken, and the end of it was all over. And I would say in a year's time, you know, it was out of the news.
When you reflect back on what you were able to do in setting this record, I know there's going to be things that mean something to other people, but to Hank Aaron in a personal sense, what are you most proud of in doing this?
Well, I guess I am proud of the fact that records that I mentioned before are made to be broken, and no matter what record seems to be, people may say, well, nothing, nobody can touch a record. I'm proud of the fact that for a moment there, I showed people that if given the opportunity, that any record can be broken.
When you and Al Downing get together, what do you all talk about over that night?
Oh, we talk about anything but home runs. Seriously, we do. We talk about anything. Al was very professional about this. He was not one of the guys that I hit a lot of home runs off of, and I just got a lucky pitch to hit out of the ballpark. And I happened to get it up in the air, and I hit it out of the ballpark.
When I take a look at players, and I know there was a get-together when they did honor you, and they had people like Ernie Banks and Frank Robinson and Lou Brock and Reggie Jackson. When you look at those type of players, what was the common denominator of all that greatness? What is it that great players always do?
When you see great players, or you see, no matter whether it's in the field of athletics or whatever it may be, you know, when you see great people come together, they have one thing, if you'll notice, that they all have one thing in common. They are always able to tell you that what day and what time, when did they happen to be able to make history. And that's what happened when you reach that greatness.
Hank, when you played the game and when you left the game and today, you brought one thing, that five-letter word, class, to everything that you did. On behalf of all baseball fans and sports fans, I want to thank you, and I don't think we'll ever forget April the 8th, 1974. Congratulations. Please come back and visit with us again here on Sports Byline.
Thank you very much.
We'll take a break, come back, and continue across the country and around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network and the Internet. We've got you on Sports Byline.